sometimes when you read the Old Testament, you can get one of those little flashes or moments when you just kind of go, this really is kind of eerie. And when I mean eerie, I mean of a tremendous foresight. The Book of Wisdom was likely written about a century and a half prior to the birth of Jesus. And you get in today's first reading, it's not something unique to the Jewish experience, but the clarity of human selfishness is really clear. There's a reading in Plato's Republic where he describes the fate of the just man. And the only way that you can really tell that the just man is interested in being just for justice's sake is that he'd be willing to be condemned to a shameful death in order to prove that he is just. You're given a slightly more intense version of the same thing in today's first reading, but it's given from the perspective of those who do the killing. And it says in the opening, the ungodly reasons unsoundly saying to themselves. And what I found reading this is that although this accurately represents to a T people that I've known that be willing to do this kind of thing, they never actually say it in just those words. They'll always kind of couch it in some other way to explain that the other guy is really the evil one. I just want other people to know what I already know. He's a liar. He's a fraud. And so this is usually where our vindictive passion of scandal, gossip, all of these different things kind of come from. It's almost this like, I'm being challenged to be better. It makes me feel bad about myself. Again, this is the prodigal son thing we talked about over the weekend. There's what God calls me to be. There's where I am. And then there's that horrible thing we call anxiety, which is that space in between. And that space in between makes us feel terrible about ourselves. And one of the easy ways of discharging that pain is to say, the reason why there's a discrepancy is because of you. Him specifically. Not really, I'm kidding. But when we want to be able to say, the only reason that you have these expectations is because of that guy. And so what we would want to do, generally, is to start finding his secret sins. We look inside his internet, and we're like, what's his search history about? Who are his friends? Where does he hang out at night? What does he do? Da-da-da-da-da. And the person doesn't, and they'll say to themselves, I know this is creepy and weird, but this is justified. Why is it justified? Because people need to know that this guy's a dirtbag. Really scary stuff. And what makes it really nasty is the fact that it is morally justifiable. The moment we start saying, God is on my side as I'm doing this nasty thing, we are really, in the end, no better than those who murder in the name of God. In fact, that's exactly what we're doing. We're tearing a person's name down. We're tearing a person's reputation down. We're tearing down who they are. Because we don't want to do the one thing that Jesus is always telling us to do. Repent. Take responsibility for yourself. Let him worry about himself. As Jesus says to Peter when he starts anxiously asking, what about him? He says, mind your own business. You, follow me. And you get another interesting situation where Jesus addresses this in a slightly different issue. So I mentioned that the teachings that happen in John are directly correlated to a miracle that occurs. So we have now skipped a chapter in a bit, and today's gospel is actually, if you look at the numbering, it's actually cut and pasted from a whole long discourse that Jesus has. It happens after the multiplication of the bread and loaves, the fish and the loaves. So the miracle that Jesus is using to teach is, this is a part of the bread of life discourse, after the bread of life discourse. Because in the first miracle, we have Jesus restoring marriage, which is a symbol of restoring creation. In the last one, we had Jesus doing the works of creation as well, where he's recreating human nature. He's restoring it to its original dignity. He does the same thing with the man born blind. When he does the loaves and fishes, then he talks about, I am the bread of life, What he's saying is that what you remember about the Jewish people and their exodus and their being fed in the wilderness, now I am doing this with myself. And there's that long discourse that we read at one point, usually during the summer, is like four Sundays in ordinary time, where it's like always bread of life. This is the part that happens just afterwards. And you miss a certain section in today's lectionary, which I find to be very, very profound. Jesus' brothers, his cousins, the guys he grew up with, they say to Jesus, "You need better publicity," effectively. If anyone were doing what you are doing, that guy, if he were smart, he would hire a publicist, he'd talk to the local news agency, he would publish all the different things that he's doing, he'd seek fame and acclaim, and what you're doing is kind of stupid. And Jesus says to his family, "Just get out of my face." He dismisses them, and then they say, "Come with us to the festival in Jerusalem." And he says, "I want nothing to do with that. I don't want that fame. I don't want any of those things." And this goes into what I was trying to say yesterday, that because Jesus knows that he's the Son of the Father, he is not at all interested in human acclaim. He wants to reveal his Father. Popularity means nothing. But the really funny part is, immediately after he tells them to mind their own business and get lost, and that they're merely worldly people that he is not interested in pleasing, he's still a Jew and wants to go to the festival. So he goes in secret after they all leave. And he can't contain himself. He goes to the festival, and the Festival of Booths commemorates the Jewish people wandering in the wilderness. They had these tents that they would have outside the city, and then they would use it as a way of remembering their wanderings. They had to live for about a week or so when they're gathering the harvest inside these tents, and they're like, "Oh, this reminds us of our past, da-da-da." So that's why this is connected, because you have the bread of life when they're wandering in the wilderness, and then they're living in these booths. And then Jesus is now amidst the people, and then he starts declaring, rather, I don't want to say shamelessly, but just out there, who he is and what he's about. And what I find is really quite interesting about how he does this is that he knows that everyone is trying to kill him. And so it has a certain amount of patience about it that he's not quite going to be able to do it. But you know the last line? They tried to arrest Jesus, but no one laid hands on him because his hour had not yet come. I'm pretty sure a Pharisee didn't say, "Well, let's not arrest him because his time has not arrived." Like, that's not what the narrative was in the time. That's John looking back and then realizing the violence didn't come to a head yet because this was not in God's plan. That God was narrating the whole sequence of events. But when Jesus goes and he proclaims this message to the people, he's trying to get them to become attached to himself, the person that he is, so that when they're attached to him, then they know the true meaning of things. And when we're in the truth, then we do not give in to the temptation of today's first reading. When we want other people to be exposed for their faults, I'm sorry to say, like most sins where we project onto other people, it's often an expression of our own guilty conscience. If we have a tendency of constantly saying, "This guy has an ulterior motive, this guy has a cunning plot, this lady's planning something," it probably means that I do that on a regular basis. And you notice that Jesus doesn't have any ulterior motives except for his Father. And so when the crowds are beginning to look at him, they want him to overestimate what he is about to do. His brothers, his family, his disciples at times. The entire world has developed in us the habit of self-advertising. But a person who advertises is very rarely interested in the truth. They'll always put forward their best side. They'll always put forward their most admirable qualities. God does not do that. He comes to us in humility, and then to truly encounter his face, we must go through his cross. As Plato said, to truly know the heart of a person, you have to know who they are in the midst of trial. Not when what they profess to love is paying, but when it doesn't pay. Because then you see why they value it and how far they're willing to value it. Jesus is in the wilderness proclaiming to a people who misunderstand him, who reject him. He's trying to reveal to them the Father, and they're treating him like a mere magician and circus monkey. But he loves them, because that's the work that his Father has sent him to do. We as Christians can often fall into the temptation of the same advertising, where we want to make the church attractive by weird initiatives or all these other things that just kind of basically just add a little bit of tinsel on the roof. But what makes the church truly stand is that we are baptized children of God, that we have been transformed according to that image. We won't have the same sinless character that Jesus has. And so when the accuser comes before you and says, "You're a nasty person," you might have to agree with them. You might have to be able to look them in the eye and say, "Yeah, I'm a bit of a swindler. I'm sorry. I'm a bit of a fool. Yeah, okay." But as long as it's done in truth and in humility, you'll be able to transform them, because the one thing that the accuser is unprepared for is humility. They always want to get you angry by attacking your pride. But the more we know ourselves, the more we know the truth of ourselves, the more we wander with Jesus in that wilderness and eat the bread of life that he is providing us, we know our value, and the world can't take it away.